Hey everyone, this is Zed. Before we get started tonight, I wanted to take a few minutes just to let you know that tonight's show is actually going to be broken out into two different parts. So tonight is part one of that interview that's going to release on Thursday night, August 16th, and part two will release this coming Sunday night late, so really it'll be there for your Monday morning drive. We appreciate everyone listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
There are former Trump fans all over the internet who are burning their Make America Great hats, which is very scary because it means they've discovered fire.
It has to do with the fact that in the Soviet Union, if you want to buy an automobile, there is a 10-year wait.
We have constructed a governmental welfare scheme which has been a machine for producing poor people.
I asked you about Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election.
I think that all government is a waste of taxpayer money.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Circus Podcast. This is Zed. I am joined tonight by Red.
Hey everybody, I'm still Red. Still Red.
And we have a very special guest with us tonight. Her name is Kathleen Saucier. I hope I said that last name right. And she is with the Facebook group American Patriots Against Double Standards. Kathleen, say hi.
Hi everyone. Thanks for having me on, Red and Zed.
Yeah, we're glad to have you with us tonight. So you have some very interesting stories. Red sent me some information about some of the things that you've been involved with earlier today. So we wanted to kind of get you on the podcast tonight to kind of talk about your story, talk about, you know, the event that happened in your life and then what led to you starting the Facebook group. And then we'll also talk about some of the other things that you just have going on and some of the things that you're working on through your Facebook group later on. So I guess let's just get right into it here tonight. So the first thing that I think is on Zed and Red's mind, can you just kind of walk?
You don't know what's on my mind, okay? Well, you don't know what's going on up there.
I've logged enough hours on the microphone. I think I got a pretty good idea. but we just want to, first of all, can you just walk us through the story, what happened with your son? I know that he was convicted of a crime because of some pictures on a cell phone of a submarine. And then, of course, he ended up, I believe, getting a pardon from President Trump. Is that correct?
Yes, part of that's correct. He was pardoned. He wasn't convicted. He actually pled guilty. So there's a difference in that. So let's backtrack a little bit and I'll just...
Sure, yeah. Why don't you just give us sort of the overview?
Sure. So in 2016, my son pled guilty to a crime of mishandling classified information. He had, in fact, 7 years earlier than that, so in 2009, when he was 22 years old, had taken 6 photos on the submarine that he was stationed on, and basically became a part of a FBI firestorm, and we all did, our family did, and he was brought forward for charges of mishandling classified information. And as I mentioned, he pled guilty. He then was sentenced to 1 year in prison, federal prison, and 3 years of probation, federal probation after that. And we started filing the pardon process, clemency pardon process, just as soon as he went into prison. And he actually served a prison sentence of 1 year, and then approximately 6 months after he was released from federal prison, President Trump pardoned him this past March.
So he pled guilty, which I know that is something that Red and I have talked about before on the podcast, the pleading system. It seems to be that a lot of the times, you know, you go into the courtroom and you're sort of faced with this dilemma of if you plead guilty, even though you think maybe you didn't do a crime or you didn't do the crime, Oftentimes, people will plead guilty just because the consequences of not pleading guilty can be much more severe. Is that kind of what happened here?
That's exactly what happened. So basically, what I'd like to give just a little background information is that there were many others taking photos on that submarine at the same time. They were held to a different standard within the military justice system, whereas my son's case was brought out into the civilian system. Why, we do not know. It's not clear to us why this happened, why he was the chosen one that this happened to. But it, as I mentioned, the pictures were taken in 2009. The FBI didn't actually start this investigation till sometime in 2014. And then it, over a period of 2 years, we were in and out of court hearings, in and out of all sorts of other things. I was accused of being in cohorts with him to sell these photos to the Russians. I was working as a federal employee with a pretty good position at that time. I was harassed at my place of employment. I had law enforcement officers, FBI and NCIS show up at my house without a warrant with long guns pointed at me. It was a lot of threats of intimidation that occurred during that 2 year period. In fact, we actually had picked a jury for a trial. We were going to trial. We were very hopeful about it. We were hopeful about the jury that we chose. And a week before we went to trial, I was informed by my supervisor that I was under federal investigation without him knowing why that happened. At that point, my son said, enough is enough. I'm going to plead guilty. So he pled guilty because they were basically going after each person in his family. And so part of what you'll see on my page, American Patriots Against Double Standards, is that I talk about why I set up that page. And why I set up that page was, here I was, an American patriot myself. I was a civil servant. As I mentioned, I worked for the federal government. I did not serve my country in the military, but I served my country by taking care of our military and our veterans and their families, and was very proud of that. And I never thought something like this could happen to me, and yet it did. And what I realized was that there were many American patriots who do the right thing and go to work every day and support their country, whether they're in the military or in law enforcement or civil service, or just people that are doing the right thing and going to work each day and contributing to our society. And yet they are either maliciously prosecuted, or, you know, held to a different standard than other people. And that's basically what my voice was during that time period, during the election, was that here was my son who he admitted that he took those six photos and he was going to federal prison. And here was Hillary Clinton, who at the time in 2016, 2 years ago, I look back at it now, and what we thought was just an exorbitant amount of things that she had done that were so horrible isn't even just it's just a chip in the paint on it. When now we look back these 2 years, all the things that have come up that, you know, evidence has proven over and over that she's done. So I became very driven in that mission that I was going to not stay quiet and I was going to get loud, and not just for my son or my family who, you know, has gone through so much, but for so many other American patriots that didn't have a voice. And so I started American Patriots Against Double Standards in 2016, around this time, actually, around August, so about 2 years ago. And I'm now, just today, rolled over 26,000 followers, so I'm pretty excited about that. And I hear a lot of stories. I've heard a lot of stories, in particular since my son's case was so public, so newsworthy, and also since he was pardoned, I've had a lot of people reach out and say, please help me, please help my family member. You know, I heard about this case, and I'll look at every case. And if I believe that there is certainly something in there that just doesn't feel right, I will make recommendations for them and what we did, the process that we did to contact our local, congressman, to start that avenue and try to utilize those resources. But in a case in particular right now that you mentioned, I am fighting for a particular case, and I'm fighting for that case because when I heard their story, it sounded so similar to ours. And what sounded so similar to ours was the fact that even when the FBI and the Department of Justice realized that my son had done, he had taken 6 photos as a kid. When they realized, and they had to have realized over and over and over, that we weren't, that we were patriots, that we weren't a family of people that were trying to harm our country, that there was nothing nefarious about what had happened. It was merely a very dangerous mistake on the part of a kid who was proud of where he was serving, proud of the people he worked with, wanted to have it as a memento, as so many people do. Was it right? Absolutely not.
And before we get into the other story there, I want to back up just a little bit, because I want to make sure I paint we paint the best picture we can for the listeners, you know, because we've mentioned the photographs, but, you know, I think your son was actually stationed on a submarine, right? So it's not like he was like sneaking into a submarine late at night and snapping pictures. This was basically where he lived, I guess, is how submarines work. I'm not very familiar with the Navy, so if you kind of want to go into that and, you know, why your son had those pictures and that kind of thing.
Sure. Yep. A submarine, they're stationed there 24/7. And they, you know, the area that he took the photos in was exactly right. His living area, as well as the area he worked in. Every single thing on a submarine is classified. Most areas are the lowest level of classification. And, you know, I mean, even a coffee cup in the galley area where you eat your meals is a classified piece of, you know, equipment, so to speak, on a submarine because of what it is. So there are no areas on a submarine that you should be taking photos of. The issue is in 2009, when this happened, cell phones had just really started that capacity to have a photo. You know, it wasn't like the flip phones, and it was a different kind of phone, you know. And so most of them had those phones. The Navy had told them no pictures, but they really hadn't caught up with technology with regards to cell phones. So as you mentioned, you know, he had no ill intent. He was taking a photo of an area that he worked and lived in, as do many military members. And again, was it right? No, it wasn't right. But it was a mistake that he shouldn't have done. And the piece about it, I think, that's so difficult for so many people to understand is the fact that there were two other people, there were many that were taking photos, but two others that had gotten AKA caught, or, you know, they found out that they had those photos on their phone. And one was, they were both reduced to rank and they were fined $500. One of them is still in the Navy and was promoted to quite a high position in an officer position most recently. So to show the different standards in itself, what occurred in the Navy is pretty extreme. And then to show what happened where with her classified documents that she had on her, you know, little server in her home, were some of them at the highest level of classification. Some of them, things that we've now found out, which we didn't even know then, that were leaked to foreign entities that actually probably caused deaths and severe danger to many of our troops and other families.
So the pictures, I want to just real quick, how did they get discovered, I guess? So, you know, they're on this cell phone, and you mentioned that the FBI was, you know, I guess harassing you, it sounds like, and many other members of your family about possibly selling them to the Russians or whatever. So how did the pictures get discovered?
So the phone was lost during that time period, after 2009, sometime between 2009 and 2010. And it was discovered at least probably sometime around 2011, 2012 in a dump. And so it's very, the whole case, when you start to read it and go back and read any research, any of the articles that were done, there's some that were really done well about the story and told the truth. It was quite,
Now is dump, is that a, is that some kind of like insider term for black market Russian sales?
Well, one would think that it was that, you know, oh my goodness, like this sort of thing that happened, but no, that's not what happened. It was an actual like dump, like you take your trash there on Saturdays, you know, or Wednesdays. And so the fact, there was so many things about it, like how did this happen? supposedly the person that worked at the dump said he saw this cell phone laying out there. So he went out across the garbage and he picked it up and tried to turn it on, but it wasn't charged. So he found a charger for it. He charged it up and he looked at it and he saw these photos that to him looked suspicious, and then showed it to someone else. And they said, oh, that's the inside of a submarine. And then the next thing you know, the FBI is contacted. That is truly the chain of evidence that the FBI presented, believe it or not.
So there was a garbage scavenger.
Yep.
Who was scavenging the vast wasteland of garbage and found this presumably 6-year-old cell phone?
Something like that. But it wasn't quite 6 years old at that time. Probably about 3 years.
So he found a 3-year-old cell phone in the dump, and he decided, oh, I'm going to keep this cell phone. And he found pictures of a submarine, and he did his patriotic duty of reporting it to the government.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So again,
yeah. As you can see, it's rather silly, but it wasn't silly what happened to us. You know, again, as I said, I was the only one, only other person that was accused of being a Russian spy. But I believe that the reason they did that was basically fear and intimidation to try, because I was largely funding my son's defense.
So they were trying to do anything basically to get you sort of to back down, because if the funding wasn't there, then the defense wasn't there, and then they could continue on with their prosecution for whatever reason. And I also find it interesting you said that this was tried sort of in a civilian court, and, you know, most of these things would be tried in a military court, which that is, I think, very strange. Was that because the FBI was involved, or does the FBI also try military trials?
They do not try military trials, and that was my question and the attorney's question throughout this entire thing, and we continued to request that it be brought back into a military court and handled in that manner, which we were denied every time we requested that. So basically, again, exactly what you said. In most cases, having worked in the military myself, with the military, basically what happens is if somebody does something and, like, say the FBI finds a mysterious cell phone, they usually bring it to the chain of command, whatever that chain of command is in the military, whether it's the submarine, you know, the captain or whatever. And they basically say, look, we got this guy doing this out here. You need to handle it. And it gets turned back over to the military. Very often in the civilian world, that's a complaint. You know, how come they weren't held to the same standard? Like if somebody's caught with a DUI or something like that, it's brought back to their chain of command because they handle it in their own way. And so this did not happen. And we honestly don't know why. The only thing in hindsight that I can say is that I believe that the FBI and the Department of Justice and other people believe this as well. They wanted to be able to have a case to show that they were tough on mishandling classified information. And I think they thought that they could go after him as an easy target. I think they didn't. I don't think that they thought that we were going to back down.
I see. So they probably thought it was some young kid who they could just get some easy charges on, intimidate, back into a corner, and then later be able to say, oh, look what we did. We're tough on leaked documents.
Correct. That's what I believe it was. Because as we're starting to see all of these things open up with the FBI files and all these other things about the cover-up for Hillary, they knew they had to have something. And if you look at it, the cases compare almost. It can't be apples to oranges. It's oranges to oranges or apples to apples, because Hillary Clinton was mishandling classified information. You know, what I said to when I did an interview, if you watched any of my interviews, is it's clearly mishandling having information on an insecure document or an insecure device is mishandling classified information. The differences are here. This is where it changes. My sons were at the lowest level of classification. Those photos were never transmitted to anyone. He never gave them to anyone, never showed them to anyone, never transmitted them to anyone. As far as I know, the last time I checked, an email is clearly transmitted. So there's evidence, even back then, that there was evidence that she had transmitted and received classified documents on her email. And so when people said, well, she didn't know what it was, during her debate, she said, well, I made a mistake, you know, or she was unaware. And I'm like, that's BS, excuse me, because the fact is, if you know anything about classification, she was an originator of classification, which that means that she made a decision about how documents were classified. So if a document, she got trained in it, just like I did, just like my son did, about classification and the levels of classification. So at that point, I said, basically, so you're telling me that this person who's going to be president of the United States and we're going to trust our country with doesn't know what a classified document is, when this was clearly one of her jobs, one of her responsibilities in her role. So again, clear double standard at that level. And now it's just even gotten huger as far as the double standards when you look at the things that have happened. I believe they, based on what I'm reading now and over, things keep coming out, is that they were doing everything they could to lessen the damage for her.
Well, what I think is really interesting is that the Russia thing, that they hit you with the Russia thing, and to me, the Russia is just a big bat they use to hit people with. They say Russia, and I really feel like we're in the second Red Scare. I think we're in Red Scare number two, and anyone who's kind of stepping out of line with the, I don't know, the zeitgeist of the Russia fear is really just painted as a Russian apologist or a Russian proponent. I mean, even people like Jill Stein, we were talking about recently, who has never been pro-Russia at all, but she does have a spot on RT, the Russian television network. She's being painted as some kind of a benefit for the Russians because she helps suck voters away from the Democrats. So it's, to me, the fact that they pressured you and called you some sort of a Russian agent or a Russian saboteur, for me, is just the icing on the cake of this whole story, of just the psychosis of where we are and how we let the society get to this point where we let people get away with that sort of thing. I mean, you're not selling classified information. You're just a kind of a normal person trying to live your life and do your duty, right? And it's honestly, when these things happen, it's for me, it's a reminder of how little we should trust the state and how skeptical we should be when they bring things before us. From, I don't know, from the bottom to the top, we need to look at the government with a skeptical eye to make sure that they're really doing what they're saying they're doing and they're actually portraying the truth accurately. Because I think in your case, If they were coming to your house and harassing you to try to get you to back down, to stop paying for legal bills, which is true, at least I think it sounds true to me, and I've heard this repeatedly in other stories, it's wrong, and we need to do something to stop it. I don't know exactly what, but.
Well, and I agree. You know, and one of the things I did say to them was that, look, you're doing your job, but I could tell you that this is not right what you're saying, you know what I'm saying? But I recognize the fact you're doing your job. I respect it. You're doing your job. But the part that when I sit back and I look at it over and over is that exactly what you said. So they showed up at my house. They had no warrant. If I hadn't have known that I had the right to ask that, I would have I don't know what would have happened, you know? And when I asked them if they had a warrant for my arrest, they said no. And I said, then why are there people pointing weapons at me?
Well, I'll tell you what would have happened. They would have come into your house and they would have found some minor violation somewhere of something that you had done wrong. They would have gotten you into a room and they would have kept pressing and hounding until you admitted, and this is the FBI's go-to, until you admitted that you had lied to them about something. So they would have interviewed you for 36 hours straight until you said something dumb or inaccurate, and then they would have made you admit to being guilty of lying to them. And this is their tactic. They do it over and over again. I'm so glad that you didn't let them into your house.
Right. Well, and I can tell you what ended up happening was I was a federal employee. I said, look, I work for the same boss you do. That's the president of the United States. I don't feel comfortable with you here at my house. You can meet me at my office, which is a federal building, and I would speak with you there. They interrogated me for 10 hours that day in that office.
Wow.
10 hours. I had no break, nothing. They even interviewed my boss and my supervisor because they wanted to see about my behavior at work. I mean, it was just, and they came back another time right before we were supposed to go to trial. And they, two of them came back and they basically said, they set me down. And again, it did exactly what you're saying. And this is the tactics that they used. Now, do I believe that there are good FBI agents? Absolutely. Do I believe that the ones that were doing what they were doing to my son were good FBI agents? No. Because they came back again, and it was right before we were going to trial, and they kept saying, you're going to run out of money. They said, we have all the money in the world. And I just looked at them. I said, yeah, you have my money, my taxpayer money, and every other taxpayer money. I said, so I get what you're saying. I will run out of money because you know how much I have.
They literally said that to you? They said, you're going to run out of money?
Oh, they did, and they said it in court. They said it outside of the court. We actually brought it to the judge's attention that they were making those comments in the hallway. The Department of Justice, the prosecutor, who no longer is working there, by the way. She was one of the ones that was gone after Trump came. But the prosecuting attorney, as well as the FBI agent, made those statements in the hallways. Every time we went to a hearing, they just said, why don't you just back down? You're going to run out of money. And I just looked at them. I said, I'm not going to back down because what you're doing is wrong. He's innocent of what you're charging him with, and what you're doing is wrong. And what I would say to them each time was, do you have any kids? And they'd be looking at me. And I said, because if you had any kids and this was happening to your kid, what would you do? Back down? So again, this is what I'm saying. If it wasn't that I dug my feet in and I wasn't willing to back down. And I'm not saying that I'm anything great. I'm not. I just got ticked off. And I thought to myself, how dare these people do what they're doing? And that's why the case that I want to bring up, my son's case, I'm grateful that my son's going forward and he's doing what he's doing. He's not backing down himself. You know, he is standing up. He has filed a lawsuit against Comey, Obama, all of them. Now, is that going to go anywhere? I have no idea. But basically, his thing is, he's not going to back down until there's some sort of justice with regards to this double standard and that it doesn't stay out of the media. He could easily walk away from this, and so could I. But we as American patriots, as you said, we must stand up and we must say, wait a minute, question it. What is going on here? Are there cases where people do the wrong thing and they deserve to go to prison? Absolutely. Did my kid do the wrong thing? Absolutely. Did he deserve sitting in federal prison for a year after he spent 11 years of his life dedicated to service to our country, multiple deployments? Did he deserve that? Absolutely not. And these two guys that I'm fighting for right now do not deserve to be sitting in prison, torn away from their families.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed that interview with Kathleen Saucier. Remember to tune in for part two on Monday, August 20th, and hear the conclusion and the other story that Kathleen is going to go over with you. And then a couple of days after that, I think Red and I are going to just release sort of a 30-minute what are our thoughts on this whole thing, so you can kind of get what we're thinking behind all of this as well. Remember, you can check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/dailycircuspod. If you enjoy the show, that's a great way for you to contribute and ensure that we can continue doing this, as it does take time from both of our personal lives. And, you know, we aren't making a ton of money. We don't have any sponsorship. This is all homegrown and just us. Also, send us your thoughts on this interview at Daily Circus Pod on Twitter, at RedTDC for Red, and at RealZed, that's R-E-E-L-Z-E-D for Zed. We'll see you on Monday, August 20th for the conclusion.
Looking for a great new podcast where both of the hosts also think Jeff Sessions' stance on marijuana is ridiculous?
Oh no, the gun went off. Somehow that's related to marijuana.
Well, you know, I heard that marijuana can pull triggers.
Well, it is the gateway gun.
A podcast that takes political issues seriously, but also isn't afraid to have some fun.
All right, let's start with PETA and how they took over the movie.
Chewy cooks a pork!
The Daily Circus Podcast brings you interviews on events you won't believe are happening in 2018 America.
I was getting ready to play some video games with some friends, actually, when I get a call from my mom saying that there are 6 police cars in her yard wanting to talk to me.
So, 6 police cars.
While you're playing video games.
The Daily Circus isn't afraid to get into the real issues on gun control.
I want the government to be afraid to start a civil war. I think everyone should want the government to be afraid to start a civil war. I mean, we would all like individuals also not to want to start a civil war.
And of course, the Daily Circus covers the latest on Donald Trump.
Because his ego is bruised, because if there was Russian interference in the election, even if he had no part in it, then that somehow to him means that he's got to be sad now and go.
The Daily Circus Podcast. Click one of the links below to subscribe and get informed.